everybody. What's going on? It's another episode of the Succession Podcast here on Post Show Recaps. It's Post Show Roy Caps. I'm Josh Wigler. We're talking more Chianti Shire here this week on PSR, episode 8 of season 3 of Succession, Chianti Shire. And talking about all of the wild things that are up in the air. Should probably be careful about saying up as it pertains to this episode of Succession, and a lot of things below the surface as well, which is another thing I should be careful about considering how this one ended. Everything is a minefield here as we are progressing towards the finish line here of Succession season 3. I am so excited that I am not alone right now on the podcast. Mostly, excited about the guests, but also just largely excited that I'm not alone on a podcast. That would be uncomfortable and weird, but I'm really thrilled to have here with us today Twitch streamer extraordinaire, grand commander of the less than two crew. I don't know if that's an official title, but it's the one that I'm going with. And also the co-host of the inevitable future post-show recaps podcast, Prison Breakdowns. It's Pooya Zanvakili. Pooya, how you doing?
Yo, Josh, thank you so much for having me. That is, I will say, the most original announcement for me to come on a podcast that I've ever got. I've never gotten any of those titles, and I want all those titles.
Yeah, so well, you could take them for your less than two crew. You could do whatever you want. For people who do not know what you're all about, Pooya, and are just listening to the Succession stuff and don't listen to everything else that's in the extended post-show recaps, Rob has a podcast family. Why don't you do a quick introduction of your own? Tell the people who you are and what you're doing.
Sure thing. I podcast over on the Rob is a Podcast Network talking Big Brother, Survivor as a guest. And then I also host the 90 Day Fiance podcast and the Masked Singer podcast over there. And then on my own side hustle, I have a Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Pooya, where I'm a Twitch partner and I stream about 3-4 times a week. We do tier lists there. We answer people's questions. We play some Goose Goose Duck Among Us type games with the other podcasters. We have a good time. We know how to have fun. And then on top of all that, in this last 2 months, I want to say, I've binged a lot of shows top to bottom for the first time, including Succession. So yes. I'm having fun out here.
You're new to Succession relatively recently, and you crushed the whole thing just in a shot.
Pretty much, yeah. So this actually happened because when Liana and I, my partner, we watched Squid Game together.
Yeah.
It really made me feel like, oh my God, there's so many shows out there that I've always said I'm going to watch and I'm not watching. So then she started getting busy with work and I had way more free time in the evenings. So then I started binging a bunch of shows that I had just never watched or thought to watch. So Barry was a part of it. I watched Barry top to bottom.
Amazing.
Then came Succession. Then I just finished Insecure. Yeah, so this past month and a half is when I've watched Succession from season 1, episode 1 to now season 3, episode 8, all of it.
How did that play in such a quick watch?
It was great. It really was, because I feel like I had not really, like, Succession was not on my radar. One thing that is probably my blind spot is that the older I've started getting, the less attention I pay to award shows, the less attention I pay to stuff that's not in my own personal bubble. So I had not, to be honest, had a lot of information on Succession. But every now and then, Friday nights when I stream on my Twitch channel, people will ask, you know, what shows have you watched, blah, blah, blah. And I'll get a lot of recommendations. And Succession kept coming up. So then when I started watching it, it's a slower pace, obviously, but I mean, it
builds
up.
You were warned that everyone is terrible, I assume.
I actually wasn't. I was not given any heads up on anything.
Did you feel this kind of creeping sensation of like, I shouldn't like these people, right? Or were you afraid to admit that because no one told you what to think about the show?
Yeah, I couldn't tell at the beginning. I'm like, okay, maybe everyone's going through a rough patch. All right. Oh, no. Okay, this person's toxic. All right, cool. Oh, this person also? All right, so now everyone's just battling to see who's the worst of the worst. Okay. Oh, cousin Greg is trying to blackmail? Cousin Greg got infected. Cool. It was like, is there anyone that's redeemable?
Yeah.
The answer was no, but that's what intrigued me. Because I feel like for the first time in a long time, because not even with Game of Thrones did I feel this way. Game of Thrones, I rooted for the people that were like better and rooted against like the Lannisters. That's how I did it. Yeah. But then with Succession, I was like, oh, I actually have rooting interest here or like care, but I actively know everyone sucks. So it was very interesting.
So who are you actively rooting for? Let's start here. We've got a really big episode of Succession to talk about and so many different corners that we could begin with. And due to that, let's do this by kind of getting a gauge on your Succession takes and using that as a way to start talking about where some of these characters are. So when you say you've got a rooting interest, who are you rooting for as we are looking down the finish line of season three of Succession?
Okay, so let me preface this by saying the way I know who I'm rooting for is one of those moments where, like, inside, which result do I want? So this goes back all the way to season one when Kendall was trying to stage the coup. I wanted Kendall to succeed. And I feel like I've still kept that energy, even though Kendall literally, you know, takes a person out like in the middle of the show and is responsible for the death of somebody.
Yeah.
But I think Kendall's who I've been like, you know, on the low rooting for the most part. And then obviously he won my heart when he rapped about his dad. So like that was a wrap.
So you're in on L to the OG. L to the OG did not turn you away from Kendall Roy.
Dude be the OG though. You know, like I have to follow the OG. I have to.
Yeah, I feel like Logan was already a terrible person, but is even more terrible in hindsight when he has treated Kendall the way he has treated him, and he was given the gift of so much music, so much original music at that, and he's been so horrible to Kendall.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care. Even if the track was awful, if someone made a song about me, I'm flattered. You know, like that's very cool. It's a whole tribute. So, yeah, I feel like Kendall ultimately for me was the one I root for, even though like I can fully recognize like, you know, the douche vibes off Kendall often. So
is that a kind thing for us to be saying about the dead, though?
Nah, I mean, yes, yes. If they dead, though, I don't think he's dead. I don't think so.
Well,
I don't think so. We
got to get into that. Obviously, it is sort of the potentially it'll bear out as the unexpected question of the week or the unintentional question of the week. But the way that the episode ends has lit up the Succession internet. Anybody who's watching Succession and has access to a Twitter account, they are currently the author of several good tweets and bad tweets about Kendall Roy's survival odds on Succession right now. And a lot of people whose opinions I trust are conflicted. Puya, I'm seeing people who are very convinced that Kendall is dead. I'm seeing people who are fully in denial that Kendall is dead. I find myself bobbing and weaving between both positions every single day. Maybe hour by hour, though mostly sticking to, I think he's going to make it at least through to the finale. Where are you landing? And did you read that scene at the end of this episode as the death of Kendall? Did that even register as a possibility for you?
Okay, so I actually really enjoyed listening to you, Grace, and Jess kind of like battle both sides and ultimately left that podcast thinking, either result I'm okay with because I think they know what they're doing. The show's in good hands. But I will say my first watch, I thought, oh, no, he's gone. He goes out the same way that, you know, the other guy.
The waiter.
The waiter goes out. But then upon the second watch, like just watching that scene specifically, he's like a presidential candidate that's asked about weed. He didn't inhale. He didn't inhale the water. So I'm out here looking at this. And I'm like, all right, he's exhaling, and the bubbles are forming, but he didn't inhale. That's the next shot. So to me, it plays a little bit more like no. And I feel like Kendall has had fun with water. You know, he likes doing this. I have, like, me and my cousin back in the day, we'd go to the pool and we just kind of like quietly be underwater and like stay still and just come up a little bit. So I feel like that's just his fun with water. I think obviously the bottle of beer going down is kind of the indicator to people that like he lost control because like he's gone. Like the bottles, why would he let the bottle go? Like he's rich. Why? Who cares what he
does? Maybe he's done with the beer.
Yeah. Bottle don't matter. Someone else will pick it up. You know?
Yeah. And you know, he's, you know, saying that he is, you know, the new representative of woke liberal America. But behind closed doors, he's probably just littering bottles of beer wherever he goes. He's, you know, he's still a Roy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, every Roy, I believe, you know, operates in a way where they're like, it would literally be a waste of my time and money to pick that up. You pick it up. Like, you know, they're going to have that energy. So.
Well, we got to talk about the possibility that he is gone. And there are a lot of people who are convinced for a lot of reasons that he may not have made. I want to give a shout out to Slothanova on Twitter, who tweeted at the Post Show Recaps account that my theory is that he went to Logan either to get out of Waystar or to die. He had his mind made up. And after that talk with Logan, he decided to die, whether that was passively or intentionally. What do you think in terms of Kendall's headspace coming into this wedding? His mom's getting married again. He's coming all the way. He's going to have to be around all of his family that's basically fully rejected him at this point, Puya. Whether or not he's deceased, Kendall Roy, do you feel like this is a guy at this point in the season that would... do you think that he feels like he'd rather be gone?
Honestly, it's very possible. And I think for me, I go back to his birthday party, back to the push. Once he got pushed, I feel like that's when it kind of snapped everything into reality for him. When he gets up off that floor, he realizes, I have no one from my family backing me anymore. I have no one in my corner at all. My dad doesn't, you know, mess with me anymore. My brother doesn't mess with me. My sister's not really messing with me. So he loses everything else. And for what? To gain this company that also is you know, still is going to have his family in it. So for me, when he goes up to Logan and kind of says, listen, let me break free, that is a very good shout that because he wasn't let free, he found freedom elsewhere. And freedom in this sense would be exiting the game of life and going away. However, I feel like this is one of those things where he could, there's still many other avenues that could potentially happen here for his escape. He wants to leave. He wants to leave the nest. And I feel like, you know, obviously this episode, the reason it was really good for me was that there's a couple lines that you can just pick up and apply to different places. The line about Logan, you know, kicking just to see if it'll come back. I feel like this is a good indicator of, yeah, Logan's still doing that. Logan was not willing to let him leave the minute he realized Kendall wanted to leave. When Kendall didn't want to leave, he was willing to let him leave. So it's just a battle of control here. And as far as where Kendall's going to go, if Kendall is truly gone, then we know where to look at and what to point at for the reason for that.
Yeah.
But if Kendall's still around, best believe he's going to be looking for that exit route still.
What do you think the show looks like in both directions? Let's talk it through. So there's the world where Kendall is dead. There's the world where Kendall is alive. I mean, I think the show looks dramatically different, obviously, in those two different worlds. One feels very depressing, and then the other one feels it's probably still depressing because the show is pretty depressing. Do you have a clear view of where you think this goes if Kendall is either dead or alive? Like, what does he still have left to do in the show if he makes it through this?
I feel like if he survives,
he made his play, right? Mm-hmm. It didn't work out. He wants to be bailed out. His dad does not seem to want to bail him out. His dad seems to want to just kick him around some more. He made his move. Is there a story for Kendall beyond the move?
I feel like at this point, Kendall's just, you know, this company's not for him. This is what, the second time now he's tried to take it. He can't take it. He can't close. But I feel like he's still an entrepreneur. You can still see that he's trying to get a little side hustle going, like, oh, give me the podcast wing. Like, give me something else.
Yeah.
I can definitely see him going to engage in other things, other ventures potentially. If this, honestly, I did see a theory that I wasn't mad at, you know, this whole, well, we'll find out if the picture ruined everything. We'll find that out. But if this merger of equals thing goes through, I could see him going to Gojo and giving his stuff over there and joining up with them as still part of the merger, but on the other side of it. You know?
Yeah.
I could see that being a thing.
He loves the tech. You know, we talked about the podcast possibility as well, you know, because he mentions that he wants to get into that, or that would be an acceptable addition to his buyout. But they also mentioned this podcast that's happening out there, the serial of the world of Succession, that's digging into this, you know, the true crime story of the curse of the Roys and what happened to Andrew Dodds is the name of the waiter who drowned in the UK. And so that's brought up for a reason. And then the specter of the kid is brought up again in this episode from Logan. Do you see that as sort of the gun in the drawer, Puya? Like, do you see the scenario where that is going to come back into the story in a major way, whether Kendall's alive or not? Do you think that that is going to be an imminent path that we're going to start traveling down?
Well, it's possible, because every time I felt like, oh, okay, it's done, it's in the rear view mirror, we're never going to hear from it again, it kind of creeps back up. So I could definitely see it, because they really did a good job of making it seem like it was a one and done. They caught the room key. It's over. No one else in the world's ever going to talk about this again. And that's clearly not been the case. Now, do I think this podcast is going to get anything more out of it? Not unless Kendall puts that information right out there, right? Like, that's the only link I can see is Kendall providing that information, because Logan's not going to want that information out, really.
Can you see him doing it, though? This is something that Antonio Mazzaro and I have been talking about a lot offline. He's going to come onto the podcast next week. We'll talk about it more. But the possibility of Kendall being the one who is going to throw himself out there as, yeah, this happened, and my dad knows about it, and he covered it up. If he's feeling so low, Puya, do you think that he would expose himself for this, whether or not it was to get back at his dad? I know that Jess and Grace kind of bristled at that possibility, and I feel that as well. Or if it was for his own personal catharsis of, I have to get this off my chest. This happened. It's the right thing to do, is to own up to it.
Well, there's a couple things there. One is, if the exit strategy is, I want to detach myself from my dad's company and I can't do that, and then I'm not gonna drown myself, that's not happening, then I think door number three is, I'm gonna repent for that sin and I'm gonna be taken away for it, and that'll be my break. Like, that I could see that happening. Also, I just, you know, Rob last week comes on and points out the whole iPhone theory.
Yes.
And now I'm like, listen, Mr. iPhone Roy, like, you are the good one, allegedly. So how are you going to do that? And I could see this being the case, especially because when he tells Logan, you know, I'm going to be better, like, I'm good, whatever, and Logan immediately throws that in his face, I feel like that makes it clear to Kendall, if I didn't have that on my record, I could probably stand a little taller with that statement that I'm a good person. Yeah. So I could see him trying to, you know, repent for that.
The whole, I'm a good person, and then Logan just throwing back at him, how long do you think the boy was alive, was a horrible scene.
Ooh.
One of the worst, aka one of the best, because when it's really bad, it's really good on the show. But that was just utterly devastating. This came our way from Steph. Another thing about a possible sign pointing to Kendall's death. This is pulling from last week, from the too much birthday. Steph says, something floated in my mind. It might be a coincidence, but at Kendall's birthday, the moment he decides not to perform and things really start turning for him emotionally, LCD Sound System's New York, I Love You, But You're Bringing Me Down starts to play. And lyrics in that song include, like a death of the heart, Jesus, where do I start? But you're still the one pool where I'd happily drown. Steph says, I hope Ken's alive, but I can't wait till the final episode. I feel like, Puya, if Kendall is dead, do you think that enough track was laid for it? Do you think that there was sufficient road built to the ultimate? It would be an earth-shatteringly game-changing twist if Kendall was taken off the board.
Yeah, and I think if he is out of the if he's gone as of next episode, all the signs were there. And I feel like a lot of it, the three of you did point out in the last podcast, where, you know, season starts with him in the water, right? That's come up. He's like found in the water often. This detective work with the lyrics, I'm floored. I would have never caught that. But little Easter eggs like this, if it almost makes me want him to not be on the show anymore. Mm-hmm. So that'd be like, look at all the stuff they did to make that happen. Like,
yeah, do you have a preference? I mean, because even I think that people who love Kendall Roy as a character and love Jeremy Strong's performance, and there's stuff in that realm that I want to get into. I think a lot of people who I'm talking to, your friend and mine, Sam Moore, talking about, oh, I don't want to assume your friend, Sam Moore, but Sam, you know, Sam and I were talking, and Sam said, I love Kendall. I also want him to die. Because it would feel, you know, for some people, it would feel cheap if he makes it through here, which I feel like maybe Succession, the show, is in some dangerous territory in terms of its relationship with audience expectations. Because the show's never really been a cliffhanger show, Booyah.
Right. No, they haven't been. And usually, you know, we get the you know, the bigger reveal happens right before the finale, like the last scene kind
right.
of. So you get that wrap up. Yeah, it's interesting because... as a personal, I'm always, doesn't matter what show it is, for the most part, I'm like, I don't want anyone to go. I like all the actors and actresses in the show. Like, I get attached to everyone very easily. And given that the only person so far that has, like, died on the show was the waiter,
yeah,
it would be a big shock to the system if Kendall's the one out. Now, if you told me, would another sibling being out be something you could see? No. I feel like they've all fit so perfectly that I'd have a hard time with it. And I would, the one thing I would say was, it would intrigue me infinitely if Kendall was to die here, where they take us from, where they take us, where does the show take us? Because at this point, I don't think, and the specific with the other characters, because at this point, I don't think Logan is going to react anything. Logan literally used his grandson as a poison testing plate. Like, he does not care. So
we had feedback about that.
Oh my god, okay.
Sarah said, is Logan asking his grandkid to test the food if it's poisoned the worst thing that he's ever done on this show? It's gotta be up there.
I mean, up there and stuff we've seen on screen, I would say so. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. I think this is way worse than Boar on the Floor.
Born on the Floor was bad, but it wasn't, I'm going to have my grandson potentially die of poisoning bad.
Full on showing no care for Iverson here.
This was, the way he's treating Iverson in this moment, Puya, is straight up supervillain behavior.
Yeah, I didn't love it. I felt very uncomfortable.
Didn't love it. It wasn't great. Did you read the New Yorker profile of Jeremy Strong by any chance?
So I saw that it was trending and I clicked on it and I saw tweets about it. And like, yes, everyone was like, I don't know what to expect with every passing line. And then I intended on reading it, then I never got back to it.
It's chonky. It's a big read. Okay. I don't know how many words off the top of my head, but it's a lot. It took me, you know, a solid a couple of sittings to read the whole thing because I thought I was sitting down and it was going to be, okay, I'll read through it. And then I, you know, they have all these different paragraph breaks. And it's okay, the story is continuing. It is a very big deep dive into Jeremy Strong as an actor, his history, his inspirations, what brought him into our lives as Kendall Roy on Succession, what got him to that moment, what his process is like. And it's very funny, Puya, because right now we are living in the world where is Kendall dead or not? That's a huge question in the Succession discourse. And I think another huge question in the Succession discourse is Jeremy Strong a nightmare person or not? This seems to be sort of the Rorschach test here of reading this New Yorker profile. Jeremy Strong is clearly going, if not outright method acting, he's somebody who puts himself through his paces. He can, colleagues of his are describing him on in this article as, if not outright hard to work with, his process can be difficult to work with, that he is maybe not the most pleasant person on the set of the show. And I think a lot of people are reading that. This is from Kieran Culkin. This is what he said in the interview. It's hard for me to describe Jeremy Strong's process because I don't really see it. He puts himself in a bubble. Brian Cox, meanwhile, says that the result that Jeremy gets is always pretty tremendous. I just worry about what he does to himself. I worry about the crises he puts himself through. in order to prepare.
So
he really goes through it. And I think that this is once again to shout out Antonio. Antonio had a good tweet about this where he said, I'm sure other people have said this, but the fact that there is this much good tweet, bad tweet about the Jeremy Strong piece from The New Yorker is just about the most Kendall Roy shit ever. And we are all part of the method. I think that that's right. And I think that there is a little bit of back and forth on how much is it a good thing for there to be some friction in art versus a happy home on the set. So that's sort of the very, very, very quick nuts and bolts recap of the New Yorker profile. It's really worth a read. If you get some time, if you're into Succession, if you haven't read it yet, read it, use your judgment. I thought it was fascinating. Some people think it was a hit piece, Pooya. I mean, I don't know if it's that far. It's definitely prickly. It's not the most flattering portrait of him, but it's a portrait that paints Jeremy Strong as a lot like Kendall Roy in certain regards, I think.
Oh wow, I'm definitely gonna check this out because I wasn't really familiar with Jeremy Strong until watching Succession.
Did you know he's in The Happening?
No.
Yeah, he's in The Happening, the Mark Wahlberg, M. Night Shyamalan movie, The Happening. He's a soldier who shows up maybe midway through the movie, and he's there for, you know, a solid, I think, 15, 20 minutes of the movie.
Oh, wow, look at that, yeah.
I watched don't ask me why I watched The Happening recently, but I watched it in October, again, for the second time, I think. I was like, oh, Jeremy Strong. Didn't realize it.
Is it like a blink and you'll miss it, or you definitely, no, like there's a couple lines you notice?
You watch it. Succession and then you watch The Happening, and it is impossible to miss Kendall Roy. You cannot miss Jeremy Strong in the movie. And if he really is method, it makes me, was he going around talking to trees for months in preparation? I think would be interesting. Oh,
God. Okay, well, you've convinced me. I'm reading this article later for sure.
Yeah, you should. One of the questions that I've seen pop up is the existence of this sprawling New Yorker profile proof that Jeremy Strong is leaving the show? That it's, you know, getting dropped. It was dropped on Sunday, a few hours before this episode of Succession came out. And is this the kind of thing that comes out in the media cycle timed with an actor's big departure from a show, a huge piece that's maybe timed with, okay, Jeremy Strong is now out there looking for a new role? Is this sort of a, you know, a PR move? And as somebody who has worked in these trenches, I have an opinion on the matter. I have no insight beyond just an opinion of somebody who's been at least, if not working in entertainment journalism for the entirety of the last decade and a half, then at least has worked in it for a good swath of that. And my feeling on it is there's a lot of access in this piece. Chris Evans is quoted multiple times. Matthew McConaughey is very casually name-checked as one of Jeremy Strong's friends who just like texted in quotes for the piece. There's all sorts of people who are weighing in. The level of access is wild. The author of the article, who apparently went to college with Jeremy Strong, which is another reason why people are feeling a certain kind of way about this, is going to Europe with Jeremy Strong. He's in Italy with him in one moment, then he's in somewhere else that in the next by the end of the article. With that level of access, Pooya, I don't think that this article comes out unless the article itself can weigh in on Jeremy Strong's departure from Succession, because it's such a big elephant in the room that's going to be out and about 1 week after this article comes out. I don't think with this level of access, you do this piece without knowing that Jeremy Strong is leaving the show and including that in the narrative of the profile. This is my semi-professional opinion.
Interesting. Interesting. So in a way, because I believe when I heard you on the podcast, you were on the side of initially, I don't think he's gone.
You're right.
But then do you feel after this article that, okay, I think it's it. This is it. This is happening.
I think it would be it if it came out next week. I think the fact that it comes out now, I don't know. I think that the article itself would be saying, you know, would be framing this a little bit differently. That it would be framing it as Jeremy Strong's departure from Succession. I guess in, you know, retrospect, this could read as a eulogy of sorts.
Right.
You know? But I don't think so. I really don't. I don't think that Succession does cliffhangers like this. And I think that something as big as killing off a main character, I don't think that they would do it in this vague way. Almost every episode ends with Kendall depressed, you know? There's some lingering shot on Kendall being very bummed out. And I'm also trying to think of some of the imagery that connects to Kendall in the pool. We talked about Jess brought up on the recap, sort of the quasi crucified look of Kendall in the pool at the end of season two when he's on the yacht. But another one that I'm thinking about is back in season one. One of the more prominent moments involving a pool, certainly involving a body of water, is what happens famously in the season one finale with the death of the waiter and Kendall's involvement in that. But there's this scene in the episode where everyone comes together for the group therapy. I believe it's at Connor's ranch. And Logan is swimming around in the pool and you are seeing the lashings on his back, and that's unexplained, and we don't know what his life was like to get him to that place necessarily. I'm just thinking about the way in which he kind of he's pushing through the pool and with this sort of big, powerful body language, and the times that we see Kendall in the pool, it's usually a sign of him in some sort of crisis. I don't necessarily think that that means, you know, this is the place where he dies, but I think that there is some connection to the way that he rocks the pool versus the way his dad does. He just can't do the pool quite as casually as Logan Roy.
Definitely not. And I think that's been the greatest part of the way they shot this, is that we both believe that they're not going to cliffhanger us in the finale next week. Like this week, we know, I at least feel we're going to get some sort of resolve. We'll know definitively what's going on, whether he's alive or dead. But the way they shot this last 30 seconds will cause everyone to be there live Sunday night. And I think that's just phenomenal. Like, I'm not going to wait till the next morning like I usually do. I will be there live, you know? Yeah. I'm not going to risk it.
Yeah, I mean, it is the new water cooler show. Rob and I were talking about that last week. Maybe not to the Game of Thrones level, but the discourse is loud. And if you're a Succession fan, unless you really have no way around it, you should watch the finale live, would be my guess. There's a really tight lid on it. Just some of the inside baseball is, I am to understand, screeners were sent out for basically the entire season of Succession, is what I've been led to believe. But the finale screener is not being sent to critics until Sunday. So some things happening in the finale that they don't want anyone to know about early, including the people who are like embargoed up and down on, you know, pain of death to spoil. So what, be there Sunday night is is definitely the move. We talked about Iverson for a second. I got an upsetting theory from a listener named Julie about Iverson. Do you want to hear it?
Tell me what Julie's got for us.
So Julie writes in, love the podcast, super excited for the finale. My thoughts as we head into the finale are that Kendall is not dead by the end of episode 8, as evidenced by the completely normal demeanors on everyone at the wedding in the preview. That's another thing that I was noting too. I don't know if you watched the preview, but at the preview, everybody seems that they're just fine at the wedding. They're terrible, but they're not going to not have a reaction. They're probably not doing a wedding if Kendall is dead.
Yeah.
There's a thing, you know, they're pretty gauche, Puya, but yeah,
it's like they're horrible people. They're not that horrible. Like they've still lost the person they want to kick while the person's down, you know, like they lost their punching bag. They'll be sad about it.
Yeah. Julie said, as awful as these people are, even they would postpone a wedding if the bride's eldest son had died the night before the festivities. I think that is absolutely correct. So Julie says, Iverson is the one to worry about. He's been mentioned several times throughout the series, including Logan asking Kendall how Iverson's doing, as if the writers are dropping little hints. Don't forget about Iverson. There's no other reason for the kids to keep coming up. There was Roman's line saying he was 90% sure that Logan wouldn't send poison donuts to his grandkids' home. Then there was the food tasting business, another indicator that Logan would have no problem sacrificing the kid. Rava isn't in Italy, though she attended Shiv's wedding. Why? because we need the kids to be vulnerable, and we can all see that Kendall is not capable of caring for them. Moreover, we know that Logan has been sending goons to intimidate the nanny, using the kids to gather intel on Kendall. These kids are a means to an end to Logan and nothing more. To be clear, I don't think that Logan's going to actively harm Iverson, but I do think he may say something that upsets the emotionally fragile kid that causes him to get hurt or even killed. Logan loves his head games. Perhaps that's what's going on in that scene where we see the two sitting with Logan's arm draped around the back of the bench. Based on what J. Cameron Smith said about the ending being shocking and very upsetting, what would be more shocking and upsetting than an innocent kid ending up the victim in his father's war? So that's from Julie. Julie being very concerned about Iverson. But yeah, I have to admit, I was not concerned about Iverson until about 10 seconds ago when I finished reading the feedback. Now I'm horrified.
Yeah, I feel like that would be the dark ending to the season.
That'd be among the darkest endings that they could do.
That's horrible. And like, you just made us watch Iverson eat a piece of mozzarella, and I'm like, like, you just made us watch him and admire. Like,
it turns out it was poisoned. It's just a latent poisoning
on a delay.
Yeah, it's a delayed poisoning, a time delayed, yeah, time release poison mozzarella.
Oh my god,
deadly delight.
Again, this is the beauty of this show, where they've been able to subtly put enough crumbs out there that a viewer can, you know, make a good case for. Because yeah, I remember everything that Julie points out here. Can they be this evil? Like, you know, we just talked about, they wouldn't, like, they delay the wedding, they wouldn't kill the grandson, right? But they could do both things, you know? They could, like, both could happen. That's wild. Oh god, I'm not ready for
that. I don't think that this show is going to have someone like kill Iverson. That's not, I mean, it's not that it's not HBO, but it's not Succession, I don't think. Now, could Iverson be deeply psychologically traumatized by something horrible, such as, I don't know, finding Kendall in the pool, you know, something like that? Yes, absolutely. Could he have some sort of delayed allergic reaction to the mozzarella that we are going to have to, follow down the line in the finale? Sure, that's possible. And I know that there has been a lot of attention paid to the fact that Kendall, both, you know, from the audience, but certainly on the show, that Kendall is so disconnected from his family. You know, Roman keeps making jokes about Kendall doesn't even know the names of his own kids. So something about Kendall being so caught up in this thing with his dad that he is, taking his eye off of raising his kids, and something hazardous happens to them. I can imagine that. The thing that kind of pulls me away from that a bit, Puya, is that Kendall has seemingly woken up to the fact that he does not want to be at war with his dad anymore. He wants to ghost his dad and live his life. So I feel like he's not watching out for his kids, and the punishment of that being something horrible happening to one or both of them feels like that's coming a little bit late, considering that he's sort of, Kendall at least, if he's not going to actually make the turn, he has made moves towards making a turn away from Waystar Royko. Just would feel like a very severe punishment.
Right. Like if he's out of the rat race, and the whole reason for the tabs being put on the kids and stuff was to put Kendall in a state where he will back off of being in the rat race. That's already done.
Yeah.
So I see no incentive there. Now, what I could see, again, if Kendall's whole spiel now is, I want to be away, I don't care about this, I'm out, I don't even want to talk at your funeral, like, that's not happening. What if maybe this is where Logan starts trying to, like, bring Iverson in
and,
like,
pull Iverson close?
I think I could see that being a thing.
Oh, gosh. Is Iverson going to be the heir? That's a wild thing to consider.
How old is Iverson?
This is a small child, you know. Yeah. if he's double digits, he hasn't been there long.
Right, he's a new double digits.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
know, he's a young man. That's interesting, though. I mean, if Logan has no intentions on leaving the captain's chair anytime soon, maybe he'll keep it warm and try and bring Iverson under his supervision. and put him in a position to be the right person a decade from now when Logan thinks he'll still be alive, but he probably won't be.
Right. And if you know, if you are losing your oldest, if Kendall's like out, Iverson could still be intrigued to stick with the family if you're trying to bring Iverson close. And that's like a ultimate long con because you're investing in someone who's not going to be relevant to the company for at least another decade or two.
Yeah.
So you're playing the long game there. And then that's how I see Ken. Like if Kendall truly does get his escape, that's how I could see Kendall still being linked to the family, is this battle of stop talking to Iverson. Iverson doesn't want, I don't want Iverson to do anything with this company.
Yeah.
So.
Also, not for nothing, the name Iverson, Puya, if you think about it from the perspective of Logan saying to Kendall that Iverson is going to be his new apprentice, then if you say the name quickly, it sounds like, I have your son. I have your son. Oh,
my God.
I have your son.
It's like a Hodor situation.
I think we just cracked it open. I have your son.
Oh, my God.
That's it.
That's case phenomenal.
Pack it up. Jesse Armstrong, don't sue us for having spoiled your show. I think we got it. I think we landed it.
That's a real, like, Adi Don type situation with Drake from back in the day, too. Like, yeah. I'm your son.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
Isn't that like I am Lord Voldemort? I have your son.
Yeah.
It'd be good. Just a thought.
I like that.
This is the sharp insight that people come to the Succession podcast on post-show recaps for that kind of reveal. It's a big one.
Mm-hmm. It's a very big one.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the other kids in the family. I feel horrible that I just called them kids because they're not. They're adults. They should know better. Wild week for Roman Roy. Did you have thoughts on all of that? And what are your Roman Roy thoughts, generally speaking, for you?
Roman is interesting. Well, first of all, finding out that Roman is a Culkin was wild.
Yeah, when did you learn that in your watch through of the show? That he was Fuller wet the bed.
I was mid-season when someone in my chat mentioned it to me. And then they were like, you know, he was in Home Alone, right? I was like, no. And I was like, was he the kid with the Pepsi? They're like, yeah. I'm like, that's nuts. Okay, cool. All right. No, but Roman is, I feel like Roman's one of those people, like, I am someone I do like when there's a person in the cast who is basically the immature one that cusses quite a bit.
Yeah.
So he kind of he plays that to perfection. Definitely the creepiest of the three siblings, easily. And it's just incredible how that last scene of the show does steal all the discussion, all the discourse, when really this week should have been like peen picture week on Twitter. Like everyone talking about dick pics again.
Yeah.
So he's awful, like very awful, but he is needed for the show. He fits.
How much has his stock just plummeted in the eyes of his father? Because for weeks now, it's just been, one of those legendary games that you hear about. I don't know. I'm pretending like I know sports, but like it's a no hitter, right? It's a no hitter. He's doing great. And then at the bottom of the ninth, there's a grand slam on him in the form of the dick pic that he sends to his father. Think that that's close to what I'm trying to say. Did this screw everything up for him? Is this a setback, or is this no for Logan? Roman, you are a clown and you're not a serious person.
I think it's a big setback for him. I think ultimately he is doing everything to graduate, right? To graduate as to become the main successor, to become the first one. I feel like if anyone had pulled power rankings on the three siblings, you know, Roman was always in the back, and Roman's finally catapulting himself up. He's got this merger of equals thing coming up. He's put in the work for that. But in one quick flash of a camera, he has kind of reminded his dad, I'm still a kid and I do dumb stuff. I do very dumb stuff. And I do it without thinking twice about it. Even when you confront me about it, I don't really have an answer for you. I'm just doing stuff because I do it, because that's what people do. Like, you know, his excuses kind of screamed when I would take home exam to my parents and I'd get like a 75. Like, mm-hmm. Why 75? And I'm like, listen, this was like the second highest. Everyone got 60s. Like, we don't care. Yeah. Why did you not do better? So I'm kind of like, well, listen, everyone's dick picking out here, okay? Yeah. What you want from me?
Yeah, so it's people send dick pics to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Logan didn't get it. That was not a good enough answer for him.
No. Yeah. And like, you know, if you're Roman, you are traumatized. Like, your dad left your peen on scene. How are you going to overcome this?
Mm-hmm.
It is. And then you have to like still meet up with him, and he will forever have that. Cause like, that's just trauma. I felt like him squirming in his seat. That's physical acting that like you should very much appreciate. It's very underrated what he does.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the look on his face is soon to become an emote in the post show recaps patron Discord. It is currently in development. It is, you know, his body language has been something that Jess and Grace talk about all the time on the podcast and how much they love it. And I think that somehow, some way, we got this kind of Hall of Fame moment from and you know what, it's all of it is terrible, and you don't you know, you do end up rooting for some of these people in spite of it. But Roman's been a disgusting garbage person for the last several episodes now. This was, this has been a bad season for him as far as if you're making the argument. Roman's the good one, though. You know, he cares about his family. Yeah, he's sarcastic all the time, but he doesn't want to do wrong by his family. And he actually doesn't, you know, he cares about his father's well-being and all of this stuff. Yeah, but he's also streamlining fascism directly to the White House. He's operating phones that have been peed upon freshly. he's pushing his brother to the floor at his own birthday party. He's not a good guy. And this episode really putting him in his place. I have to say, the longer I've gotten away from the episode and the more that I am letting myself just wait to find out what's going to happen to Kendall, the more I've allowed myself, Puya, to return to a feeling of some satisfaction that this blew up for Roman. I think something like this needed to happen.
Yeah, he needed to snap back to reality, and this was the perfect way for that to happen. Because, again, he is not a good person. I feel like, also, I didn't like the way he was able to pull one over on Kendall at Kendall's own birthday. Like, I didn't like that. I wasn't okay with that. Again, it's the battle of the dicks. Like, everyone's awful. I just can't have Roman be on top that comfortably. Like, he needs to not, he needed to be humbled. And I think this was a great way to do it. Also, and I can't stress this enough, not that I'm talking from experience, to be very clear, but you'd think someone would like double check a picture of their penis before they're sending it through. Like, make sure that you sent the right one. Mm-hmm. Like, this was so careless. So he deserved it.
It was thoughtless. It was very thoughtless. Part of that, I think, is because these people are so obscenely powerful. And even in the dynamic with Jerry, who's the CEO of Waystar, Roman interacts with her in a way where she is just another plaything. And so when you are as rich and powerful to such an uber degree as Roman Roy, I think you just kind of thoughtlessly fire off the DP, mm-hmm. This is a different person than we meet on the streets, Puya. So I think that might be a piece of it. But I otherwise totally agree that this is definitely something that just reply to the message. You know, don't start a new message. Some of the way the logistics of how this happened, you know, I don't think he has an iPhone. I think we tracked that with Rob. So I don't know how his phone works because I'm an Apple man. But do you just reply, right? You just reply.
Yeah,
you don't have to start the new text.
Like, no one is texting that way, where you fire up your messages app and then you hit new messages.
It's not a way that anyone communicates. And so there is a level to which this feels a bit like a plot contrivance when you think about it from that point of view. Because it's just not a thing that really happens. You know, someone sends you a message. How often are you creating a new message rather than just replying to the original message?
Well, I also didn't realize, like, I've never seen this interface, like the messaging interface, work like this, where if you have a new message open and someone texts you and you just click on that message, that it just adds them to the in the to column.
Yeah.
Because the way I thought the scene initially went was he opened his dad's text as he was about to send it and then posted it there. So it was a little confusing for me. But again, handle, you gotta, like, when you're sending a dick pic, like, that is fragile cargo. You gotta handle with care.
With care.
And fragile with zero care. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. 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 What do you think this says for Jerry? Jerry in hot water, you would say?
I mean, the fact it's like Jerry could have been in hot water, but might have been saved just off the notion of, well, now the dumb idiot messed it up and you can't get rid because it's not going to be a good look for you.
Yeah.
So I feel like Jerry might be in a tough spot, but also, you know, if Roman's forgiven, I don't think Roman can sit on the throne without Jerry.
Yeah.
He will not be able to. So, and I don't know if this is now a thing where Logan has realized that, and that has caused Logan a little bit of pause, but we'll see. I feel like she's safe. I feel like she's safe, especially because I look forward to the battle of Shiv versus Jerry, which feels like it might be coming.
JC had written in and says, it seems plausible that perhaps Roman and Jerry could have sex in the finale so that they can claim that it wasn't harassment, that it was consensual, as a way out of this situation for Jerry. Do you see that as an outcome, Puya? Do you think that it's time for Roman and Jerry to seal whatever deal this thing is?
Well, I don't know, because I feel like a lot of Roman is, he like doesn't, he hasn't read the dick manual and doesn't know how to operate it. So
right.
To me, it's like, is this where the unlock is? Oh my God, it worked. Like, he did it. I don't know. But like, in a weird way, I've liked their dynamic. Not to be clear that they like look out for each other and like communicate in the business world, not the weird, like, unsolicited dick pics.
Yeah. It's not good.
What do you think that's possible as the shock in the finale?
I don't think it would be. I think that it would be another huge shock in the finale that I imagine would then get scooped by some other shock in the finale. Like, I don't think that this is necessarily what J. Smith Cameron, the actress, is saying is going to happen in the finale. Though, you know, in as far as what would be happening to her character, I think that her description of shock and horror in the finale, this could line up. I don't know. I think people have been waiting to see if this is going to happen. If it's going to happen, this could be timing to do it. I don't think that I particularly want the show to go in this direction. I really liked Jerry's maneuvering of the conversation with Shiv towards the end of the episode. I'd love to talk about Shiv. Sarah had written in this about Shiv. Sarah thinks, shouldn't Shiv get the fishy this week if this were Survivor? Because Shiv is able to get one over on Roman, make Roman look really bad in the eyes of Logan. And if she wants to be successor, she's going to need to take out Roman with Jerry on her side. So the way that she's talking to Jerry, or that she needs Jerry out of the picture as well. Did you think that this was a strong week for Shiv, sort of politically, at least within the family, if not necessarily super strong for her as far as her marriage with Tom?
I think it was a strong week for her politically in the workspace. But then I would have to ask the question of, was it very transparent? Because I felt like Jerry could very clearly see what Shiv was doing when they were talking. That seemed very obvious to me. And I feel like even the little trap she set for Roman, I feel like Logan would have gotten there already himself as well. So it's like she did the right moves, but were they just too obvious and were already understood at that point? That's the question for me. But ultimately, this was a very strong episode for Shiv because she had her hands all over the episode across many different people and many different scenes.
Yeah. How do you feel about where things stand with her and Tom? Should we be getting, congratulations cards for the baby popsicles, or should we hold our horses for now?
I mean, we could do that, but we would have to get, I'm sorry, champ, like life's going to be rough for Tom.
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah. This is what she was saying. I couldn't decide on a happy birthday or a get well soon. I think we would have to do a congratulations or condolences. We don't know.
Yeah. Tom, I feel like took the biggest L of the episode, one of the bigger L's of the episode, because, and I think he's known this for a while, but his worst nightmare comes true when she gives him the spicy dirty talk that was a little too close to home.
Yeah, the afterburn. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what he was talking mm-hmm. about.
And yeah. I felt bad for him. I felt very bad for him. But I'm intrigued. And that's the thing I've really liked about Succession, Josh, is that the one couple I've been most intrigued about this whole time is Tom and Shiv. And that's because of just the different places they've been in their relationship, and the way they talk to each other has always been really unique. And I feel like there's always something new for me to look at with them. And this scene was no different. I feel like, again, the other thing with Shiv too, is she kind of played right into her mom's hand after their conversation, and then comes home and talks about this baby. But then the next day is like, listen, I was saying maybe we freeze stuff for later. So
yes,
it's a lot. It's a lot with them. And I feel like, honestly, the buildup here, I could see this being like Tom defects. I feel like we're could be getting set up for Tom defects in some type of way with Shiv. I mean, he's the one who loves her more, so it would be hard for him. But I mean, what's the straw that's going to break the camel's back with Mr. Tom? That's the question.
I think that is the question. Some quick hits. We had Linda write in about how when Greg says, look at the time to the Contessa, he's just trying to show off his $40,000 watch to impress the cute Contessa. We haven't talked much about cousin Greg. you said he got infected with the virus before. Is there any cure for Greg? Is cousin Greg? How do we get the zombie cure to cousin Greg?
I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I feel like cousin Greg is now trying to be in the same pool as everyone else. He wants to be, you know,
get out of the pool. Everyone out of the pool.
Yeah,
want to be in the pool.
Leave. Get yourself a life vest. Maybe those are the moves.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. No, he's in too deep now. I really do think so, and I feel like he has learned quite a bit from everyone else, and now he, you know, is slowly trying to cut himself a piece and like find a corner for himself in the business to thrive, but he's still way far behind everyone else. So he's playing quite a bit of catch up, but he's up there, Josh. He's up there in the douchery. He's getting there.
He's getting there. He's in the clown car with everybody else. speaking of the douchery, mentioning 90 Day Fiance got me thinking about how we think Connor and Willa would be on that show. As crazy as it gets, or 90 Day, because I don't watch it. It wouldn't be quite as nuts. How would that go?
Oh, it would be pretty accurate. I mean, Connor especially would be a character and a half. Like, the show would feature him. He'd have the kooky, quirky confessionals.
Yep.
Him walking around on his, you know, piece of land talking about stuff. Oh my God, we didn't really talk about this, but I cringed very hard at him not getting the yes. I always think about people that do the public proposal and don't get the sympathy yes, so that you can just move on and then get rejected in the privacy of your home.
A nightmare.
It's so bad. And I've watched compilations of that on YouTube. It's not good.
Why did you do that? Why would you watch it?
It was like a try not to cringe challenge sort.
Yeah.
I failed. Okay. I failed. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. It was rough.
Yeah. What do we think? Does Willa say yes in the finale? Is this it for Connor and Willa, or are they going to, are we just getting started with them as the future Mr. President and First Lady?
I could see it being a yes with conditions, yeah. Potentially.
Oh, that's it's always kind of, with conditions, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, especially with Connor. So I think that's where it's going to lean. But I do think, you know, Willa defending him at Kendall's birthday a couple times, like, you can tell that his eyes have opened up. Like, this is where he wants to be permanently. But is this what she wants permanently? That'll be the question.
Yeah. I have one last bit of feedback for you before we wrap up. This is from David Baker, who said, past antiheroes like Tony Soprano and Walter White, for the most part, loved their families. But the Roy's level of cruelty and hatred of family is quite the opposite. Are there any other TV families that have exhibited or even approached their level of fracture? Does anyone come to mind, Puya? I mean, you were talking about rooting against the Lannisters mm-hmm. on Game of Thrones, but at least Jaime and Cersei really liked each other. Who likes each other in this family that much? No one.
Right. That's a great question. Let's see. Logan, no. Shiv, not really. I mean, see, that's the thing. Shiv and Kendall had like that one hug that one time that really made me think maybe these two will be like together, close. Yeah. But that was a fleeting moment. That was it. We got one and done. I guess like in the Roys, you know, Kendall loves his son. Like, Kendall loves Iverson.
These guys don't like each other very much. It's mm-mm. a very, very brutally difficult family. I do think that it's an interesting dynamic in sort of the realm of peak TV and certainly sort of the prestige TV drama that are kind of in the conversations of, you know, best modern show. What's the best show on right now? That a lot mm-hmm. of these Breaking Bads and The Sopranos do have, at least, you know, did everything for family. And I think Logan right. would maybe say the same thing, but the way in which he demonstrates affection for his people is very murky, really murky.
It is. And like, while he has had little moments, like the embrace he shared with Kendall after Kendall breaks into tears about the death, and it's like little moments like that, but that's still like, I think ultimately, when he says life is a number on a piece of paper,
yeah,
I feel like that's what he's operating by. Everything is a transaction. Everything is a business deal. Everything has a valuation in a numerical value to him. And that will always see precedent over his family. And that's just the way it seems to me. I can't tell you who, like, you know what I would love to know? Who he loves the most. What is yeah. his power ranking of his family members? Because I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, you don't have a guess?
I mean, I feel like Roman had started moving up, but that dick pic did throw him down.
Yeah.
So, in a free yeah. fall. God, I mean, is it Shiv at this point?
It might be Connor. He was ready to make Connor president of the United States.
Yes, yes. I mean,
Connor's in a decent spot right now.
Connor, by just staying out of the business stuff alone, kind of became the most inoffensive of the Roy siblings.
Yeah, yeah.
In a weird way, yeah. yeah.
I don't know. All right, Puya, any final predictions for Sunday night? How are we going to be feeling when we get to the other side of this episode?
I mean, we're going to feel the way we feel at the end of every season of a show that we like, sad that it's over. I feel like we're going to be I want my mind blown, and I feel like that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's the feeling I'm going to be anticipating.
Oh my God, Sunday night is the night. We're really close to it at this point. All the Bells Say is the name of the episode, December 12th 2021. We will have coverage for you here on Post Show Recap swiftly after the episode ends. We will be hustling to get that recap into your feeds as quickly as humanly possible. But yeah, it was awesome talking Succession with you. Getting to talk about scripted TV with you, super, super, super fun. Where can people find you? Tell us everything that you're working on again. Give the plugs. Shout out the links. Get the people to come and check out what you're doing.
Thank you so much, Josh. And I gotta say, let me be honest with you. I was nervous for this podcast.
Yeah.
It's like, especially with scripted and a show like this, where like I haven't watched it from the ground floor.
No,
I
new always, perspective. This is good.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Is like I feel like, you know, especially when we talked just now, a lot of new theories came in. And unlike reality TV, where it's like, okay, we can all subjectively have like, you know, analysis of people's moves and stuff. This plays different, but it always brings me joy. And now I get to, check another thing off my podcast bucket list. I got to one-on-one pod with you, and that's a delight. So thank you for that.
Yes, no, it was an unbelievably fun time. It'll tide me over until we do launch our future Prison Break full rewatch podcast.
The Prison Breakdown?
Prison Breakdown. Yeah.
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 Well, until then, yes. My other venture, people can find me on, you can find me on Twitter at Puyaism. You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Puya. I do stream there 3-4 times a week. We play Goose Goose Duck on Sundays, which actually, Josh, I got my, the developers of the game gave me my own skin.
What does that mean? The so they made a Puya avatar that you can play as on Among Us?
They made a full Puya outfit just for me to use in the game.
That's
so
crazy.
It comes with my beard, with a hat, with a hoodie. It's great.
That's so good. That's crazy. That's like some Kendall Roy shit. Kendall Roy would be all about that. It's like, we'll freaking make avatars of ourselves. Freaking go stab imposter. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He'd be, if there was a who'd be good in Among Us, I feel like Kendall would be up there.
No, he'd get punked so fast. But you would think that he'd be very good, and then Roman would just giddily break the game.
Well, that's the thing. Roman would be the chaos person in the lobby that you just need for the good times.
Yeah, yeah. That's like how I play. It's like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'll just like sound off and scream my head off. I feel like that's what Roman would do.
That's the best way to play it, though, honestly, is the way I've learned it. Yeah.
So what's the Twitch channel? It's Puyaism?
Twitch is just my first name now. It's twitch.tv/Puya.
Oh, sweet. Okay, great. So twitch.tv/Puya. Puyaism on Twitter still, right?
Yes. Yeah. And then the podcast 90 Day Fiance. I just wrapped up 90 Day Fiance The Other Way season 3 this past week. And then coming this Sunday is the premiere of 90 Day Fiance Before the 90 Day season 5. And our very own Rob Sester Nino's coming back to co-host with me. So I'm very excited about that venture. It's going to be a good time. And then Masked Singer is going to finish in about 2 weeks. Liana and I have been covering this season. It's been fun. But it's time for it to be done, and it'll be done in about 2 weeks. So we're excited for that to come.
See, that's what Kendall would be good at. Kendall would be great on Masked Singer. That should be his next stop, is he should do a reality show.
Yeah. Oh,
ideally,
definitely.
One that shows off his he actually is, you know, a fairly talented person. He's overindulgent. He's a horrible narcissist, but he's got some pipes.
I could see that. You know, he could go the way of the way Ted Lasso did it with Jamie Tart, ends up on a Love Island type sitch.
Oh, yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah. That'd be good. Yeah. That'd be good. All right. Succession finale is coming your way shortly, folks. Hang tight. It's happening. Oh, my goodness. Puya, thank you so much. This was so much fun. I now have to say the thing that I say at the end of every podcast, unless you want to be the one who does it.
No, you do it. I like when you do it.
All right. Here we go. F off!